everyone, welcome back to The Sporting Post. This week we've got a really exciting episode for you all. Of course, the countdown is on for what will no doubt be a historical sporting event and something at least I never thought I'd see. Of course, I'm talking about the 2021 AFL Grand Final. We've got two Melbourne teams in the Melbourne Demons and Western Bulldogs playing off in Perth for that Premiership Cup. Really excited. I can't wait to get into it. Of course, it wouldn't be a special episode without our special guest. And while it's not Maxi Gawn or the Bont, to get your hopes a little bit lower, kidding, it's actually better. We've got May, our editor, here today. So I guess you can start us off as our guest today.
Oh, Kat, I'm honoured. Thank you so much for the intro. Let's start off with the Brownlow. So obviously, Ollie Wines took home good old Charlie. He polled 36 votes to equal Dusty Martin's record set all the way back in 2017. So it was super interesting because he's absolutely stormed home in the second half of the season and overcame the Bont, who just personally, I was really hoping he won. And he did lead for the majority of the night. And just like every year, there was plenty of discussion on social media about the method the AFL uses to choose the winner, as well as the clear dominance of midfielders in the tally. Mitch, do you want to touch on that?
Yeah, well, guys, it's good to be back for another week. I'm pretty upset that I didn't get the same intro as May did, but I guess that's what I get for being on here every week. But yeah, it's a good point what you said about the dominance of the midfield and how that sparked a lot of debate over the past few years. Just to give a few notable examples to kind of show how much dominance the midfield has had, at least this year and in previous years as well. Bailey Fritsch forward for the D's, bagged 7 goals in a 41-point win over Adelaide earlier in the season, and yet was only awarded 1 vote and was awarded 1 vote behind 2 Adelaide players who had just lost a game by 7 goals and then somehow managed to place first and second in that match. To me, that doesn't really make sense. I feel like if you've kicked 7 goals, which is an extraordinary number of goals to kick in this era of the AFL, I feel like you deserve to be considered the best player on the ground. And another example, Alir Alir, who was one of the best defenders in the game this year, All-Australian worthy. He had 21 disposals, 5 intercept marks and 8 spoils in a match against Gold Coast and didn't merit a single vote. So to me, I guess it's understandable because midfielders dominate so much of the discussion on social media. They're the most important aspect of the game in terms of they delivered the ball into the forward line. You can be a great forward, but if you don't have a good midfield, you're not going to get those opportunities. So I do understand that it tends to be weighted towards midfielders, but I do still think that there needs to be some sort of balance that we get into how we allocate votes or how the umpires allocate votes, I guess I should say. And that leads me into another point, which is that there's been debate about whether or not we need to change up the voting structure of the Brownlow, whether or not it should be changed to, you know, a panel of experts, whether that includes umpires and officials, or whether we need to go back to how it was in the early days, which was a media vote. What do you guys think of that? Do you think that we should stick with it, or do you reckon a different method is kind of needed in the modern era?
I think it could be interesting to change it up. I'm not sure about the media, like returning to that kind of judgment. I personally didn't know that was the previous method, and I was so surprised by that. But I do agree, it is very biased towards the midfielders. There's been a lot of debate as to whether we bring in, so we've got the Coleman for forwards, Brownlow for midfielders. Do we bring in that reward for defenders? It'd be really interesting to see where they go with that. But yeah, I think it's something to look into, absolutely. With the game changing so often, I think it's only natural.
Kat, I definitely agree with you there that it shouldn't go back to the way it was in terms of the media, just because the media does have so much bias in it and can get swayed so easily. So I definitely reckon with something as significant in the footy world as the Brownlow, we keep that more of an insider kind of thing rather than out to the general public there.
Absolutely. And the there's so much discussion surrounding the Brownlow, these predictions. It's definitely like a niche and an exciting time of year. For the media to get involved in that, it would just really create an imbalance, I think.
Yeah, and I think also bearing in mind that at the end of the day, the Brownlow is only one award. Like, yes, it's kind of steeped in history and we care so much about it because of the history behind it. But there's other awards. You know, the coaches vote on their MVP. The players get to vote on their MVP. There's all these other awards like best captain, whatnot. So there are other opportunities for other players in the league outside of like your ball dominant midfielders to earn awards. But at the same time, at the very least, I think there needs to be an acknowledgement of what the Brownlow actually is. You know, it's not kind of the be-all and end-all anymore, if it ever was. You know, maybe it doesn't need to be considered the best player. The best and fairest is kind of what it's supposed to be, right? But maybe that's kind of not the right framing of the award, because at the oftentimes, you know, the best player in the league very rarely actually wins the Brownlow. Like, there's been years where, you know, Gary Ablett has been out and out the best player in the league, didn't win it. Buddy Franklin would have been considered the best player in the league for a number of years, didn't win it.
Yeah.
So I think the idea that the Brownlow is always the best player of that season is maybe not actually the case. So it certainly is something that we need to consider, I certainly believe, in terms of how we go about, I guess, considering the Brownlow when we discuss, you know, the best players in the league.
Yeah. Nonetheless, Ollie Wines was absolutely excellent this season. But I do agree with May. I think the Bont, I thought he had secured it, and it's a bit unfortunate for him, but he is in a premiership, and I think Wines touched on it. That's what you aim for, you know, not personal accolades, that team success.
Well, yeah, I know what the Bont would prefer to be doing this week, and that's preparing for a grand final and not having Charlie but sitting at home watching. I know May was about to say the same thing, but I cut her off there.
That is okay. Exactly. What I was about to say is the Brownlow is one of the most exciting nights for an AFL player, but moving on to the most exciting day of the entire AFL season, the grand final,
which is coming up this Saturday at Optus Stadium in Perth. So I reckon we jump right into the grand final chat.
Yeah, so it is the second year in a row, unfortunately, where the grand final isn't being played at its spiritual home at the MCG. It's being played in Perth, which is, for us in Victoria, obviously a bit of a shame. But we can't do much about it at the moment. You know, the restrictions would have meant that we would have been playing a grand final in front of no fans, which I think would just be absolutely insane to even consider. So I think ultimately the right decisions have been made there. But it is also two Melbourne teams playing interstate, which is very unfortunate, especially if you're a Melbourne supporter. The idea that your team has an opportunity to win a grand final and you don't even get to, much less go to the game, even have a few mates around for a barbecue and watch the footy together. You don't even get to have that. You don't even get to go to the pub to watch it with friends and family. You have to sit at home by yourself with whoever else you happen to live with and watch it, which is a real shame, I think, for those fans. But ultimately, I mean, would you trade it?
No.
If you're a Melbourne fan, would you trade it for anything? I wouldn't have thought so. So ultimately, I think they'll be making the most of this opportunity regardless.
To top off, it being interstate is also an unusual... Actually, we had it last year, but they are repeating that twilight/night grand final for Melburnians. It's at Optus Stadium at 5:15 Perth time, but unfortunately for Melburnians, it is 7:15 here. What are your guys' thoughts on that? I know I was quite shocked to see them do it again. They did have a bit of backlash last year. I think personally, the entertainment aspect, halftime, pre-game, looks incredible. Like, under lights, I think it looks really professional, super extravagant. But that being said, it is hard to watch a night grand final. It feels like another game. I'm half asleep.
Yeah, I personally do not like the night grand final whatsoever. That's just a personal opinion. I know some people do prefer it because they like that kind of getting on the couch, snuggling down, watching, kind of like Friday night footy feel. But the special thing personally to me about the grand final, Mitch, as you did touch on, is hanging out with your mates, sunny day, barbecue. That's just what I get in my head when I think of the grand final. And when it's the night grand final, you can't enjoy that the same way.
Yeah, I feel like the grand final has always been grand final day. You know, you wake up at whatever time you wake up, 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, if you're a bit earlier than me, and you're getting ready for the day. You're getting built up of excitement towards the first bounce, and it only takes a few hours to get to that stage of it. Whereas when you have a night grand final, it's like, oh, like a full 12 plus hours that you have to wait before the game actually starts. And like you said, May, it's so much about having some mates over or going out to the pub to sit there and watch the game in a bright sunny day. It's spring, you know, that's what we kind of want out of the grand final. That's how it's always been. And not to be too much of a traditionalist, but I do like that aspect of it. And I do like that you kind of make a whole day out of it. And then you get to go out after the game and celebrate if you won or commiserate or whatever. And you get to go out and have a night rather than the game only finishing at 10 or 11 o'clock. And then, well, what's next? You just go to bed. Right, especially if, as a Victorian, you're in lockdown at the moment. In terms of the entertainment, so it's going to be headlined by some WA-based acts, which is a really positive aspect, I think, of the grand final. Has always been talking about or getting opportunity to get some local acts on stage and performing in front of such a large audience. I know a lot of the previous kind of flopped performances have always been international acts, like when we had the Black Eyed Peas. I thought it was an absolute disaster, in my opinion. The image of Will.i.am getting his phone out and checking his Instagram or whatever up on stage is like etched into my memory. I don't know if you guys remember that, but I certainly remember him just checking his phone on stage. I thought that was kind of a joke. So it's good to get some local acts that can actually understand the importance this event has for so many people in Australia.
100%. And on top of that, they're WA acts as well, which is not only just so good for, as you said, Australia in general, but for Perth as a city. We've got Birds of Tokyo. They are back and they're going to do the main event during the extended halftime break. And I know that they did the 2019 grand final and absolutely smashed it. They really hyped it up and really led us into a great second half. And then they also have Baker Boy, who's a really, really popular Indigenous artist. So I think it's really good that they have Indigenous representation as well in the acts.
It'll be great, I think, with the 60,000 capacity at Optus Stadium as well. I'm super excited. As bittersweet as it is that it's not in Victoria, we wouldn't be there anyways. And I think it brings that atmosphere to the grand final, as it should. I did see that only 10,000 tickets were available for general public after members and corporate seats were handed out. But it sold out within 10 minutes, so definitely no hesitation there. But moving on to the game itself, I don't want to pitch myself as a future weather woman, but I'm about to anyways. I think it's definitely something we should cover and it'll contribute. I know the Dogs and D's have played each other under the wet and in quite pristine conditions as well. So it's something we could look at. It's currently forecasted to top 24 degrees and a bottom of 13, but it should peak around 5 o'clock there, which is absolutely a beautiful day, something we don't experience in Melbourne. So they're very privileged up there, up west. Otherwise, the odds, as of we're doing this on Wednesday, so heading into the game, Sportsbet have predicted D's as favourites. So they're at $1.64 to the Dogs, $2.26. It's bound to fluctuate, obviously, but what do you guys think of that? The Dogs going in as underdogs.
Yeah, nice one there, Kat.
Very clever.
Yeah, thank you.
I think that they got it about right, as you would expect the bookies to. I think the D's have earned the right to go in as favourites. I think they should be the favourites. I think everyone expects them to be the favourites. But it's close enough there to where you think that, you know, the Bulldogs have a decent chance. And I certainly wouldn't put it past them to pull out a victory. We'll get to our predictions later. But I do think that regardless, it is fair to say that the D's go in as favourites. But with the Bulldogs obviously certainly having a chance of coming away with it.
100%. And after the prelims that we saw, obviously the Dogs and the D's won by such a big margin. I'm really hoping that that proves that this is going to be a really, really interesting grand final. And personally, I'm really excited to see what happens.
Yeah, thank God they got those heavy wins out of their system, because we really hope we don't have... I think the last 2 years have been pretty average grand finals, not too much of a thriller. But what were two thrillers were their games against each other earlier this year. So they played each other round 11 at an empty Marvel Stadium, which funnily enough still is today, but it was the matchup of the season so far. They'd only lost one game each. So this whole season's obviously been a battle between Dogs and Melbourne fighting for that top spot. D's got on top of the Dogs on that occasion, 87-59. Bruce kicked three. McDonald and Rich also kicked three for Melbourne. But Melbourne forced Dogs into a lot of skill errors, which I think that's where the Dogs are exposed. We know they love that overlapping handball game. And that was just simply shut down. They couldn't get that clean run involving everyone throughout the ground. So that was an interesting game. May, did you want to talk about round 19?
Of course. So obviously, again, that was at an empty MCG and it was a wet weather game. Wet weather games, to me, proved to be a very unique kind of game. The ball spends a lot of time on the ground, which clearly favoured the Dogs as they won 85-65. And that was a clear Dogs win. They did lead for majority of the match, Bunt was pivotal in his dominance, and it was just an outstanding effort all round from the Dogs. But in saying that, Melbourne and the Western Bulldogs have actually been the best two teams for much of the year, and they occupied the top two spots on the ladder for 16 of the 23 rounds. So I think they proved themselves as very good contenders and well-deserved to be in the granny this year.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this last week in the previous episode with Kat, how people have kind of undervalued how good the Dogs have been in the past few weeks just because of the fact that they dropped out of the top four because of a bad run of form leading into the finals. And I guess that's understandable. But at the end of the day, like you said, they were at worst a top four team for the overwhelming majority of the season and only falling away at the end. So again, I don't think anyone should be surprised about the fact that they're in the grand final. And I certainly don't think that they deserve to go in as any kind of overwhelming underdog or, you know, they've got no chance of causing an upset because it would still be an upset. But I certainly don't think that we should expect the D's to run away with this one. And as always, and as we discussed, the game will probably be won in the midfield. These two sides have two of the best midfields in the competition. You kind of got Clayton Oliver versus Liberatore. You got Petrarca versus Bond. You got the Ruckman. You got Maxi Gawn, obviously. So to me, I think as a lot of games are, this game is going to be won and lost in the midfield because both teams have the ability to put points on the board. Both teams have solid back lines. So it's really going to be about which team can control the middle of the game and give their forwards the most opportunities because we know that both teams are capable of taking any opportunities that are presented to them.
Yeah, completely agree there with you, Mitch. I think, as you said, the bottom four of the top eight for the Dogs isn't indicative of the season they've had. And as much as they're probably trying to emulate and recreate that 2016 campaign, they are such a different team from then. I almost think they're a little bit better. They've just done better throughout the season. They didn't sneak into that top eight. They've really earned their spot there, which I think is why it's such an interesting grand final. Like, when do we ever actually see the two top teams make it all the way to the end? I think finals just brings out something in other teams. And as you said, I think it's safe to say that Melbourne and Dogs boast top two midfields in the game. But yeah, I think it's going to be super interesting in the contest and to see who gains control of the game. That's where it lies.
And yeah, obviously, as you said about Max Gawn being such a pivotal ruckman for Melbourne, no offence to Tim English, but the Dogs do lack that dominant ruck.
And as always, I'm sure that Bevo's going to chuck a variety of midfielders into that role during the game.
But obviously, that being said, it's going to be a really interesting battle between Gawny and English, as both rucks tend to press forward and sometimes like to put a few points on the scoreboard.
And you never know what to expect with Gawny after his prelim performance.
Yeah, and in terms of the ins and outs of the side, Cats' favourite, Cody Waitman, will be back in the side for the grand final.
Oh my God.
So I'm sure she's happy about that, and I'm sure the Dogs are happy about that as well because he's a very important part of their team as that second key forward to back up Aaron Norton, who is my favourite player, as people might have gotten over the past couple of weeks. I really like how he goes about it. But there's always kind of a sad story going into the final, one guy that misses out when maybe he deserved to be in the team. This year, it's Nathan Jones. So 302 games for Melbourne. He's been a part of the side and been kind of the lone bright spot for so many years for the Dees when they were just among the worst teams in the competition for so many years. Nothing to be happy about as a supporter, but you had Nathan Jones there kind of as a stalwart in that team. And unfortunately, in the year that they finally find some real success, he's found himself on the outer. He can't get into the side. And now, unfortunately, it looks like, well, he's announced his retirement. And as a result of the fact that he wasn't expecting to make it into the grand final squad, he's actually returned home to Melbourne to be with his wife for the birth of his twins, which is obviously very important. And he's done the right thing there by his family, I certainly believe. But it's really unfortunate that he won't at least even get to be there with his teammates and run out onto the ground if they end up winning on Saturday. So I do think that's very unfortunate. But like I said earlier, we always have these unfortunate, sad stories. Seems like every year some guy just misses out and it's really unfortunate. And I do think just to make a point, it's interesting because you know in a lot of other sports, you kind of, if you're a part of a squad for the whole season, whether or not you play in the last game, you still get awarded. Like I know in the NBA, anyone that's been on the squad for the year gets their championship ring. same with the NFL, same with a lot of other sports. So I was just wondering what you guys think about whether or not a premiership medal should be given to anyone who has contributed to the team, to a premiership winning team over the course of the year, whether or not they're among the best 22 on the Saturday afternoon. What do you guys think?
I personally think, I heard my dad saying this the other day and I thought this was such a good quote, but dad just said that there's no fairy tales in footy. And I think that's such an important quote and it really reflects how footy is. It's such a competitive sport, especially because it's obviously got the niche of Australia and there are so many people whose dream it is to be an AFL player and get to that position, especially playing in a grand final, which is every AFL player's dream. So Mitch, in terms of what you were saying, I do like how it is just the boys who are playing in the premiership. I know that might sound a bit unfair because there are so many people that contribute to the game, but I think that's what makes it all the more special, that if you just play in a grand final, you get that medal. And obviously for Nathan Jones, it's tragic, and especially after a 57-year drought for Melbourne and finally having that opportunity and he's not part of it. But he did say to the media that he wouldn't trade up going home and being with his wife and kids for the world. So I think that speaks for itself. And he's just such a good person in general. I've never heard a bad word said about him. I really think it would have been a tough choice to make anyway, choosing between the grand final and his family. So it was made for him in the end.
100%. I think AFL is such a unique game in that, you know, it's a huge squad beyond that best 22. People come in and out of the squad weekly. It's, you know, it's all over the place. It's not that consistent team in most cases. I often think back to Ling John in that 2016 campaign for the Dogs. That was probably his best year. He gained such consistent form, obviously played the VFL grand final through injury and then just didn't make that top 22 for the grand final, which is tragic. But, you know, players were there who earned it. They won that game. You look at the Dogs and Melbourne's past, like it's one all at the moment. AFL is so inconsistent. You don't know who's going to show up on the day. So I just think I kind of agree with May there. It's if you play the game, you know, you've contributed to that win. But it is, in Nathan Jones' case, like it's not his fault. Like, of course you're going to go and support your wife. You'd hope, of course, that he would go and support his wife. That's a huge event, but so tragic.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting discussion. I'm certainly, to me, I'm not actually sure where I fall on it. I can certainly both see both sides. But just in defense of the opposing argument, I guess it's interesting that on the one hand, you could play all, 25 games in the season. And then if you tweak your hamstring, all of a sudden you miss out on being a part of that. But then whoever comes into the side could get injured inside the first minute of the game and then not play for the rest of the game. His side wins. He gets a premiership medal, but not the guy who contributed for the previous 25 games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the classic example I can remember is Trent Crowe in 2008 got injured very early on for Hawthorn. And he ended up with a premiership medal, even though, you know, he maybe didn't contribute a lot to that specific game. And, you know, he was in that side for the whole team. So I think he deserved a premiership medal because he contributed to the whole season. But on that one game, he didn't actually contribute a whole lot because he got injured. So it is just something that, like, personally, I think should be open for a bit of discussion at the very least. But like I said, I do see so both sides of it. Moving on to some other kind of concerns about the squad. Melbourne All-Australian defender Stephen May pulled up sore, as we mentioned last week, after a marking contest early on in the prelim. He seems like he's going to be right to go. No indication from anyone inside Melbourne camp or in the media landscape in general that he's not going to play. So we certainly hope to see him out there. He is such a pivotal part of their team, one of the best players on their side and one of the best defenders in the league, hence his All-Australian nomination. So we certainly hope that he's out there and we certainly hope he's out there performing at his absolute best.
Yeah, and Charlie Spargo also for the D's went down in what I believe was a twisted ankle, jarred ankle, something of the sort. But yeah, he seems fine to go. It was interesting. I think Melbourne played a scratch match over the weekend, which is quite unconventional. But yeah, I mean, they've got to do what they've got to do. You stick to your own plan, I guess. You don't win with someone else's game plan. So it'll be interesting to see the dynamics of the game, who's named for each team.
Mitch, this is also touching on what you were talking about before. Who came to mind was Josh Bruce. His season ended suffering an ACL injury in round 21, which is only two rounds before the start of finals. And obviously he's been out ever since. Definitely would be in the Dogs grand final lineup, and he is not going to play and they won't get that medal. But he is still helping out where he can. I've seen that he's actually helping out with the merch team, the Dogs merch team, which I just thought was so sweet and really showed his true character. But yeah, that's just another example of a really deserving player who isn't going to get that medal and isn't going to play in that final. So maybe might be changing my mind a little bit here after thinking of another person. But yeah, it is a really tough one.
I think it's hard to police because obviously you have players like that who miss a couple games and through injury and can't make that grand final side. But then where do you draw the line with players who are AFL listed?
Yeah.
That is a good question. Like, are you deserving of an AFL or a premiership medal if you played one game, if you played no games, but you were in the squad for the whole season, if you're on the rookie list, you know, like, where's the kind of line that you draw? It is a good question, actually. I didn't kind of think about that aspect of it, but there is certainly, you'd have to wonder whether there's a line that you draw. And then when you draw that line, what about the guy that just misses out on reaching that cutoff?
Yeah.
Right. So if you say, oh, you have to have played at least, I don't know, 10 games for the year. Well, what about the guy that played 9 games? All right. Like, okay, so at what point, you know, like, there's always going to be, regardless of where you set the line, unless you set the line, everyone who's involved in the team for the whole season at any point deserves a medal.
Yeah.
That I guess that is an argument to the other. Like, at least if you draw the line, okay, if you played in the grand final, at least that's like a non-arbitrary line that you can just draw. Any line after that maybe is a bit arbitrary, and it's like, well, if this guy deserves it, why does this guy who played one less game than him not deserve it? So that is maybe another argument to the contrary.
Completely agree with you there, Mitch. So since we've obviously established ourselves as panelists of AFL 360, apparently, in this last conversation, I think it's only natural that we get into our predictions of the winner of the game and the Norm Smith, have a bit of fun with it.
All right, well, I'm going to kick it off. I'm just going to jump in there before you guys make up your minds.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Melbourne just because I like backing the favourite. I'm not a fan of going for the underdog, I know a lot of people are, but for me, I think Melbourne's been the best side for most of the year, and they've shown it so far in these finals, and I believe that they will get the job done on Saturday. In terms of Denorm Smith, difficult to look past Maxi Gawn for me. I think the midfielders might, to a certain degree, cancel one another out. So you're not going to be able to really differentiate in terms of, you know, does Bond outplay Petrarca or whatnot. So I think the battle, and Maxi Gawn has a terrific opportunity. Like we said, he's not playing against a Brody Grundy or like a super high caliber ruckman. So he's certainly going to have an opportunity to impose his will on the game and maybe go up and kick another 5 goals if the mood takes him. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But I do think Maxi is in a very good spot to be a Norm Smith medalist, and I can't remember the last time a ruckman won the Norm Smith, so that'd be the first time that's happened for a few years, that's for sure.
Mitch, I'm going to have to agree with you there. Melbourne, personally for me, as much as I do really like the Dogs, I just love their side in general, but I do think Melbourne's going to take the cake this weekend, and I really hope it's not by much as well. I really am hoping this granny's a close game, but yeah, Max Gawn's just, he's just an amazing player. He's going to be consistent in the ruck. And also the Demons' defence is just unlike any other. That's why they had so many of their players in the All-Australian team. And for Norm Smith, after the Brownlow, I'm honestly thinking it could be Petrarca or Clayton Oliver. He's just, oh, I love him. But no, after those two at the Brownlow and after their performance all season, I am really hoping it might be one of those two, but obviously can't look past Gawn either.
Yeah, that's super interesting, guys. I'm going to throw Dogs as winners only.
Oh, here we go.
To change it up. If I could choose Max Gawn to win the grand final, I would. I love that man with my heart.
Cody Waitman's going to be very disappointed hearing this episode.
Cody Waitman's crying in the club.
I'm going to clear it up. I do not have a crush on Cody Waitman, guys. I'm going to throw that out there. Cody, if you're listening, love your work, but not the girl for you. That being said, I am the girl for Max Gawn. I'm going to pitch myself for that. But Norm Smith, I do think you guys are underselling the Bont. He came second in the Brownlow, if you guys forgot. But yeah, he's been excellent all season. Strong midfielder, pushes forward. He just is that connection that the Dogs are just, they play well when he plays well. But as you said, like, Melbourne's midfield is equally as insane. So I'm just so excited for that midfield battle. So yeah, I'm going to say Dogs by a little bit, even though I love Max Gawn, and Bont for the Norm Smith.
Honestly, to wrap it up, in the end, I reckon either team that wins is going to be without a doubt deserving of the cup. Melbourne has had, obviously, a 57-year premiership drought, and I think personally has had the best season in their career.
Yeah.
But then again, on the other side, the Bulldogs have had one of the most hectic seasons literally ever. They have been on the road for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
And to win a grand final after all of that happening to you and being away from your families and friends for so long would just be an amazing achievement. So either way, I reckon very deserving, but it's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. Well, guys, this has been the longest episode in Sporting Post history, I think by a pretty considerable margin. So I think we might have to wrap it up there. It's been a great time. I've certainly enjoyed this episode. I hope everyone that's been listening has as well, as long as it's been. So I think we might leave it there. Thanks very much for tuning in. Enjoy Grand Final Day, whether you're at home or you're out and about, either way. As we've all said, we're hoping for a terrific contest regardless of who gets up. So enjoy the game and we will see you next time. Take care.